Let's just pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word. Lord, help it to challenge us and encourage us and show us the way that you want us to go. Amen. So, we've been looking at a series called Do You Know Him? And today it's Jesus as a revolutionary. Now, I decided then, I actually want to know what revolutionary really means. I looked it up in the dictionary and it says, favouring the nature of revolution, especially in government, one who takes part favours a revolution. A revolution is great upheaval, complete change of outlook, social habits, circumstances, radical change of government. Now, if I said to you about a revolutionary, I wonder whether what your picture would be. And I decided that my picture would be actually of somebody with a gun. It would be not a gentle revolution, but something quite violent. And I was sort of thinking of people like Hitler. He actually was a revolutionary, if you think about it, what he did to his society. Of Stalin. Well, do they fit with pictures of Jesus, of the Jesus that you worship? Certainly don't fit with my picture. And then I went on and I thought of Mother Teresa, who worked among the dying. Of Gandhi, who worked without violence to release India from British colonial rule. He was working gently. And the other one that came onto my mind was Rosa Parks. You may or may not remember that in Montgomery, she's a black woman, she refused to give up her seat to a white man. And that sparked off the boycott of buses by the black community in Montgomery. And then it also led me on to think of Martin Luther King, who had that, I have a dream of seeing all people free. That's the revolutionary person I believe Jesus is. They were moulded in Jesus' steps, if that makes sense. So I don't imagine, I don't know, maybe you have heard of Jesus as a revolutionary. I think most of us think of him as a teacher, of a miracle worker, of a friend of outcasts. And also there's that precious Jesus, meek and mild. And then we have that, one of the carols it said, and Jesus, no crying he made. No, that isn't the Jesus that we should be worshipping. And in fact, if we go through the gospel and look at Jesus' actions, that more fit the title of a revolutionary. Going into the temple and overthrowing the tables of the money changers and driving them out of the temple, that's not Jesus meek and mild. And then him telling them, his teaching upset people. As David was saying with the Beatitudes, that's God's upside down kingdom. And the parable of the Good Samaritan, using this parable to talk about loving other people outside your own race, outside your own friends. And it's the person, the despised Samaritan, who comes to help the traveller, and Jewish people have walked past him. And so we have if we go to the reading in Isaiah, where it starts, it's telling them off. But actually, I want to look a bit before that, because if you're looking at one of God's complaints about the people, where they've been told to come back and rebuild the city, and they thought they were doing right spiritually. They say, we have fasted, we have humbled ourselves, but you've not noticed it. And then God says, yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife, and they strike each other with wicked fists. How do you expect me to hear? They thought they were doing right. And it's a bit like the Pharisees, if you think about it. There's that lovely story that Jesus told of the Pharisee and the publican. The Pharisee says, oh God, how wonderful I am. I thank you. I'm not like that awful person over there. I do this, I do that. And he goes off thinking, yeah, pray, that's great. And the is that the tax collector, I think in an old version it says publican, not the publican that we think of, he just says, sort of, God forgive me. And Jesus said, that is the man who goes away, been put right with God. He doesn't want all these sort of spiritual things that the Pharisees were doing. And so the people of in Isaiah's day were exploiting the poor, the widow, the foreigner. And God is more interested in their actions than in a kind of spirituality that actually doesn't carry on into life. So he says, is not this the kind of fasting I've chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not them to turn them away from your own flesh and blood. And so there's a revolutionary society. I wonder how much we are participating in doing these things. So Isaiah would have upset the righteous people of that day in the same way as Jesus upset the Pharisees by what he said. And in our gospel reading from Luke, we have Jesus quoting from another chapter in Isaiah, Isaiah 61, and is basically declaring, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. And if you know about it, remember about his baptism, we have in fact the demonstration of the Spirit of the Lord coming upon Jesus as he comes out of the water. And I suspect they didn't really like him saying that. And so he has his job description. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. The revolutionary king is coming in to build a revolutionary kingdom, if you like, an upside-down kingdom built on these values. And they all thought he spoke very nicely. Yes, that's lovely. It's a bit like people go out the door and say, thank you, Vic, a nice sermon. And you stand there thinking, I don't think you've heard what I've said. I don't think you've heard it at all. Because I think if you did, you wouldn't quite be saying nice sermon. So, and it says, all spoke well of him, all amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Well, it's interesting because the gracious words, they weren't quite, that wasn't quite the interpretation that maybe we would put on them. Because if you go to the end, you remember the end of the reading, they actually want to kill him. So actually, they weren't quite so happy. Why did that do that? Well, when it says they're amazed at the gracious words, it was more likely they were astonished that God's grace was for them all, because they very much saw themselves as God's people. Great. But actually, they wanted to put a hedge around it. So they were God's people. And if we're not careful, I believe as Christians we do that. We come into our buildings. I mean, it's amazing, people are sitting out there. Isn't it a pity the weather isn't always good, so you could always be outside, as you can in some countries. But we tend, if you like, to huddle in our buildings so people can't hear us, see us. And then we go out and we get rather diluted in the people we're around. So they were cross that God's grace was for everybody. Why was it for everybody? They long for God to condemn everybody else. And I wonder sometimes if we're a bit like that, in that somebody has perhaps done a great crime. Yes, kill them. We want vengeance, if we're honest. If people's done, if someone has hurt us, we perhaps secretly would like to hurt them back, whatever. It's very difficult, isn't it? And that's what they wanted very much. They didn't see that God's grace should extend to everybody. And Jesus had realised they weren't really listening. So he goes on to point out about prophets not being accepted in their hometown, which of course he wasn't. But then he says, you know, in Elijah's time, when God set up the heaven, there wasn't rain for 3.5 years. What did Elijah do? He went outside the people and he went to the widow of Zarephath and supplied her so she was okay for that famine time. God blessing a widow of Zarephath? That can't be right. Because she's not a Jew, so it can't be right. And then he goes on about Elisha healing Naaman, who was the commander of the Syrian army, commander of the opposing nation. Well, how come that God blessed Naaman, that Elisha was healed? Oh, that's not right. And that's why they were so angry with him. And that's why they threatened to kill him. And of course, in the end, they did kill him. So being a revolutionary doesn't always lead to a nice life. So God's love is for everyone. How willing are we to take that on board? That person that makes us really, really uncomfortable, says perhaps some vile things. How prepared am I to try and get alongside them and try to share God's love? How prepared am I to do it? I don't know. Don't I really want to do that? That's not easy. And think of the violent reaction there was to George Floyd's death. But then think of what happened from that, the Black Lives Matter campaign, and how it's made most of us far more aware of the way that minorities, if you like, have been treated. Yes, it's made us sit up and think. And as Christians, we need to recognise that how countercultural Jesus' message is, that God's kingdom is an upside kingdom. It's not the values of the world. As Christians, we need to speak out a great injustice. We need to help those in need, etc. Jesus very much challenged the established order. He reversed the priorities of human hierarchies. And we see in the outworking of the early church, in the beginning of Acts, we have the believers shared everything in common. They sold things. They shared. And one of the good things that came out, particularly the first lockdown, was the way that people actually helped other people, the way people began to take on board the need for food bank and that sort of thing. That's been a tremendous outcome. But that's a sort of upside-down kingdom. Out of something that was horrible, as something good has come. So how content are you by the way things are? Do you want to see change? God's kingdom, as I've already said, is an upside-down one. It was thought in Jesus' day, if you were rich, then that was a sign of God's blessing on you. If you were poor, that was your problem and you weren't doing what God wanted you to do. Well, we know that's not true. But that's reversing things again. And I've been reading a book, and it's about somebody who's in the early 1820s, who is what's classed a pauper, but realises, very much a radical, a revolutionary in her own way, which is very difficult because very much if you're in the other classes, those down there should know their betters and therefore they shouldn't challenge their betters. But it's only by challenging them that things are changed. And I believe God calls us to challenge systems. And it's also such a blessing to share with others, to be able to give to others, and to be able to receive. God blesses us when we bless other people. So are we prepared to be revolutionaries? Are we prepared really to love our neighbour as ourselves, which we've been told to do, in today's me society? How prepared are you to follow Jesus as a revolutionary king, not as meek and mild, but as a revolutionary king? Remembering it caused him his life, and it might well cause you some friendships. It's hard, really, being a revolutionary in the right way. So Jesus disturbed the society of his day. How prepared are we to disturb in the right way today's society?